Clayton. John Clayton.
Enough! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time. If you guys have questions for John, you can text those questions in right now to 710-710. We'll try to get to as many of your questions as we can before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
You know, usually right before you come on, Clayton,
we
have the national anthem singer do her warm-up or his warm-up. And whoever it is tonight, who is it again? Schreier? Is that what you said, Mike? Tonight,
Trisha Shear, Sergeant Trisha Shear.
Fantastic.
Oh, really good.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Amazing. That was just her warm-up. So, anyway, in case you want to come down to the ballpark, hear a really good version of the national anthem and God Bless America.
You think they get John down to the ballpark?
Not John, but John's watching on TV.
Remember, it's Friday night date night.
Oh, it's date night.
When's the last time
about that?
When's the last time you came to a Mariner game, John?
About 3-4 years ago, I think it was.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the last time they went to the playoffs.
Yeah.
That'd be 2 decades ago. John, before we get into the Seahawks, give me your thoughts. I thought we watched a really compelling, well-played game last night. What was your takeaway from the Cowboys and the Bucks?
I thought it was great, and I think you can see the response to it was great, too. I mean, with 24.4 million people watched it, I think that's the most since, 2015 or whatever it was. And the fact that it was back and forth. I mean, it was a strange game in the sense that, there was more passing, I think, than anybody thought. And I think so much of that had to do with the fact that first it was hot, it was humid. You got two teams that pretty much didn't play a lot of their own players in the preseason. And so, there's certainly some rust on both teams. But I thought that the quarterbacks played exceptionally well. I mean, Dak Prescott throwing 48 passes. I mean, you have Tom Brady almost throwing for 400 yards. But I think the big thing is, this didn't help Seattle, in the sense that here's Dak comes down, gets the field goal try to take a lead, but gave Tom Brady 1 minute and 24 seconds with a home crowd behind him to come back and drive down easily for another field goal.
How about Gronk, man? I mean, 8 targets, 8 catches, 90 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was he going to retire? Was it a couple of years ago? Was he seriously considering that?
And he did retire.
Well, he did retire.
He did retire.
He missed a year.
He missed a year. His last year in New England, he missed that.
Okay, but that was for sure that he was never going to come back.
Well, I mean, he left the door open, but it's funny because the people back in New England, they said, Gronk didn't retire from football. He just retired from Bill Belichick.
Okay, yeah.
I guess you could say the same thing that Tom Brady did. I mean, he left himself open to kind of get out of there. And so, Gronk left the door open. And again, he loves football. I mean, hey, I know that just from the standpoint he went to my high school. And, he loves the game. He's a Hall of Fame tight end. He's going to be first ballot. I'm sure of that because he's one of the greatest tight ends in the history of the league, one of the most complete tight ends in the history of the league. But, no, I think that, if he was going to not go – if Tom Brady didn't leave New England, then Gronk would be still retired.
Yeah.
Would you say most of the people that went to your high school love football, John?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say so, yeah. I mean,
Don't think it's a better high school than Wooster High School.
I mean, Hall of Famers does Wooster have?
I don't know about Hall of Famers. I'm just talking about state championships.
Mm-hmm. Back when I was there, they were really average. I mean,
Well, there you go. I mean, how many Hall of Famers can come from an average program? I don't know.
I mean, because remember, Jason Taylor went to my high school. He was a pretty good player. And even, let's put it this way, now the star of the internet and radio and TV, Joy Taylor, his sister, she went to my high school.
You know what? There is nothing more compelling, no more compelling radio than two old men arguing over their high school.
Yeah, but I'll give you the line that we used to use because that was back then when I was in high school. And I was actually doing the PA on the broadcast on the football games. But Barry Johncor was the head coach of the team. And we always said, hey, 5-4 with Barry Johncor.
Ah. So they were set for mediocrity, huh?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, I saw this tweet today from Bob Condotta where he was talking about the injury list for the Seahawks. He says, quote, is, not sure I've ever seen this. Seahawks are listing no one as out, doubtful, or questionable for Sunday's game. Everybody on the active roster considered fully healthy and ready to go. Is that something you've ever seen, and do you chalk that up to, well, that's because they went through the precautions of not playing really any starters?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's rare. It probably has happened in the past, but I certainly can't recall it. And, you know, I think that you can see that they manage things really well. I mean, compare that to what's going on in Indianapolis, because they've got major, major problems heading into this game. And here's Seattle. It's like, okay, you take your inactives and you make the decision on those. And we'll see if there's going to be any more roster moves tomorrow. But that'll be interesting. But over in Indianapolis, major problems. I mean, you know, Eric Fisher, the left tackle, is not going to be able to play. He's coming off the Achilles injury. Sam Tevy is on injured reserve for the season. You know, Quentin Nelson's going to play, but he's got the, you know, a sore back. Also had, you know, a little bit of a foot problem and all that stuff. You know, Carson Wentz is going to start and play, but he's only had four practices. Think about that. Since the beginning of the OTAs, in a new offense with Frank Reich, he's had four practices. You know, T.Y. Hilton is out. He's into the middle, probably the middle of the season before he comes back. And then another big one that really hurts them is Xavier Rhodes, their best cornerback. You know, he's out.
Yeah, it's funny. We just talked to the guy who does play-by-play for Colts Radio, Matt Taylor. And you know, he was saying, well, we don't really feel like there's much of any weak points there. And, you know, I'll tell you, after having talked about him, to him, really good offensive line there. They got some good running backs and everything. I just think, man, when you have that big of a question mark at quarterback, and you mentioning, you know, just the four starts, I mean, the closer we get to it, you know, it gave me a little bit of pause thinking about how their offensive line, they got some really good defensive players, but man, when your quarterback situation isn't nailed down going into week one, I mean, yeah, four practices. How are you feeling about the game?
I think it's going to be Seattle, just because I think, you know, my thought initially was they got a break in the schedule when, you know, they got, you know, Indianapolis in the opener, because you figure any quarterback going to a new team, and I don't care if he's, you know, had been coached before by the, you know, Frank Reich or anybody else, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a struggle. So getting him in the first week, I thought, was an advantage for Seattle. Then you come back and you say, okay, now he only has four practices. That makes it a little bit easier. And then to make it even worse, you know, they're down to their third string left tackle, Julian Davenport. And so it's like, you know, that there can be some problems there. So I think that helps the pass rush. Now, I can tell you the one thing that they will do, because they're three deep at running back. In fact, they just took one of the running backs today and gave him $6.2 million a year. And this is, even though they've got two other good backs ahead of him, is that, you know, what you're looking at is that there's going to, and it just makes you wonder, tomorrow, are they going to trade, you know, one of the running backs? To do it. Obviously, it's not going to be their draft choice from a year ago. Maybe it's going to be Mack, the running back, but you know, they're going to run the ball. They're going to concentrate on trying to run the football. And so now Seattle has to do their best job of, at times, getting pressure on Carson Wentz, but also trying to make sure that they can contain the running game.
John, we saw Latavius Murray sign with the Ravens, so they've got their running back situation, I guess, sort of handled for the time being. Now, he left because he was asked to take a pay cut, didn't want to take the pay cut, and now he signed for $2 million. So is he making more in his current situation, or would he have made more previously if he'd have taken the pay cut?
If he would have taken the pay cut, I don't know where the pay cut was going to go to him, but you know, he probably, you know, would have had more with the pay cut, because you know, he had a big salary and an $850 prorated signing bonus and all that stuff. I mean, he was making really good money, but of course, you know, the Saints are tight against the cap, and have been tight against the cap. So it's like, you can see that there was going to be some kind of an adjustment there. But in the end, it's like, you know, now Murray goes over there. And, you know, again, you know, like all these things I always warn everybody about is like, once you see the initial numbers out there, don't trust them 100%. Because, I mean, there's been deals that they say it's $5 million, and it turns out to be $1.5 million and all that stuff. So we'll see where the numbers are. But I think you can see that they're looking at Devontae Freeman. I think they're signing him to the practice squad. You know, they have Le'Veon Bell, which is wonderful. So you make that make you wonder, are they going to trade for Antonio Brown? And so it's like, but they are really, really in bad shape. Because you think, I mean, look, to make matters even worse, they're down three running backs, Marcus Peters, they had to put Nick Boyle, Pro Bowl caliber tight end, on injured reserve. They don't have anything left on the offense.
Yeah. Hey, John, as far as penalties go, last night there was 19 penalties. Now, I had some complaints, and then, you know, at the end, the supposed push-off by Godwin, whether you think that was a push-off or not. Bob and I were kind of having a discussion about that. But how does it go during the season typically? I mean, are they calling him tighter in early games, and then does it start to taper off? Or, you know, how does that go season to season?
It's adjusting each season. Again, you have to judge it by the seasons. Like last year, they were really, you know, because they had the change in who's running, who's supervising the officials and all that. And they really took a tact that they were going to cut down on the number of penalties, and they did significantly. Now this year, you know, they added more safety rules, you know, more blocking type of rules and stuff like that. You know, they have the taunting penalties and stuff like that. And so it's like that's going to be the big increase. I mean, the big thing is to see how they do on the holding calls, because the holding calls and the interferences are two of the biggest ones. Because, you know, if you get a holding call, it has a good chance of killing your chance to make a long drive. Because now you have to overcome, you know, a first and 20, second and 20, whatever it's going to be. Makes it really, really difficult. But, you know, in the end, I think that what you're looking at is that, you know, we'll see if it's going to be more penalties. I kind of get the feeling there will be more penalties this year than there were last year.
710-710 is the Mac and Jack's text line. If you guys have questions for John, you can text those in. We'll get to some of those coming up. But, John, I want to play a couple sound bites here for you. And we talked about this yesterday where Cam Newton had said, hey, Friday, I got some things to get off my chest. So he did cut number one here. He's talking about, in his estimation, why the Patriots didn't want him backing up Mac Jones.
The reason why they released me is because indirectly, I was going to be a distraction. Without being a starter.
Yeah.
And this was
but
not
how?
Come.
Verbally or in the locker room?
Just my aura.
Okay.
Just my aura. And that's just, and I told you this off camera. That's my gift and my curse.
Yeah.
When you bring a Cam Newton to your facility, when you bring a Cam Newton to your franchise, people are interested by mere fact.
They are intrigued.
Who is he? Yeah. Why does he wear his hair? Yeah. Why does he talk? Why does he act? Why does he perform? Why does all these questions?
Yeah.
Now, when Bob Stelton hears these kind of comments from somebody like Cam Newton, Bob Stelton starts to wonder, does he really talk like that and he's comfortable talking like that? No. In all honesty, John, I mean, when him talking about his aura is too much for him to be a backup there. Now, I was telling Dave, I guess on some level I could understand what he's saying, and there might be some truth to his presence there. He took it a little far, but what did you make of what he had to say?
Didn't make much sense. I mean, because again, it's like, okay, so your chances of getting a starting job right now are limited to very limited. Okay, so now if Mr. Aura guy goes to another team as a backup, is that aura going to affect the starting quarterback? I mean, it's like you're basically putting a clamp on what you can do if you're going to be a backup quarterback in this league. That doesn't help him out. I think it's
great.
It doesn't hurt his chances of getting a job, because again, if you need a quarterback, you need a quarterback, and you know he's talented enough to do some things. But you know, some of the things he said didn't make much sense. Like for example, I didn't lose the starting job. Well, they named Mac Jones as a starter and then cut you. How did you not lose the starting? You lost the starting job, okay?
Right.
Then, of course, he goes in and tries to explain why he had to go into COVID's list for 5 days. And what he ended up explaining was that, he had to go down and get his Liz Frank injury checked to see where that was. And so that took him out for a couple of days. And it's like, if you're going to get your Liz Frank injury checked and get a second opinion on it, why didn't you trust the New England Patriots to be able to do that?
Yeah, well, and it does put a, like you said, put a cramp on his ability to get signed as a backup. I mean, talent-wise, no, but I mean, his aura, I don't know why he would go
his
out and say
aura.
That. Maybe he's done. Maybe he's done, and that was his way of saying, all right.
Maybe, who knows? He says he's got a lot of football left, so we'll see if he gets an opportunity somewhere. One other cut I want to play for you on a different topic here, John. This is from our buddy Marcellus Wiley, who was talking about, he was comparing the situations of Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers and saying, you know, which guy he'd rather be right now. Listen to his logic and tell me what you think.
I don't know what I'll do, but what I do understand about myself, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, is that there's no pressure on me. I'm great. I'm an MVP multiple times. I'm a Super Bowl champion, and I'm the reason we won a Super Bowl championship. Russell Wilson can't even say that. Yes, they won a championship, but was he the driving force? No. So this season, they both kicked up dust in the offseason. We get it. So that's why this is really a question. But if you ask me which body would I want to be in, would I want to be Aaron Rodgers coming off an MVP campaign who has the mental makeup he does, or be Russell Wilson, who's affected by everything?
What do you think, John?
Bad. I mean, it's like, come on, Marcellus.
It's bad. Like,
yeah, it's like, so it's like, are you still bringing up the most overdone story in sports history? You know, the fact that Russell complained about the blocking and getting hit and all that stuff. I mean, that's behind him. I mean, he's, now obviously you can make the argument that Rodgers is a slightly better quarterback, but he's also, you know, Russell Wilson's younger. And, you know, Russell Wilson hasn't missed a start. Even though he's been injured, he hasn't missed a start. Aaron Rodgers is very durable, but he has missed starts because of injuries. And so it's like, I think the more comfortable situation is more Russell Wilson, just from the standpoint that, one, you know, he knows the team he's with, and he's going to be with this team next year, and maybe we'll see if he's going to be for the rest of the career, depending on what Mark Rodgers does. But, you know, then, you know, you look at Aaron, and Aaron's got to be unnerved in the sense that, you know, he's going to go to a different team next year, and he wants to go to a different team next year.
Hey, John, do you know anything about this Lael Collins deal?
Substance.
His suspension, I mean, and his agent is trying to appeal it, and the NFL disagrees. Tell us about this.
Well, the unusual thing is that normally the way these suspensions go is they're usually even numbers. I mean, this to me was a little unusual in the sense it's five, an odd number. But apparently, yeah, I don't know what the substance was, but you know, it wasn't PED or anything like that. So to me, that really hurts. I mean, you know, now you have to think about who you're going to play at right tackle, and they're actually thinking about taking Zach Martin and putting him at right tackle, you know, because Zach's one of the best guards in the league. But, you know, Connor Williams did a good job of filling in and doing some good things there. But that really hurts. Now, the only thing that helps out the Dallas Cowboys is their easy schedule, because their schedule is a breather. I mean, it's like, you know, they've got the second easiest schedule in the league. I have to look at this because, you know, I know they said, you know, Chris Collinsworth said it during the broadcast last night, that they don't play a playoff team until week 11 now. Well, I know that they only have like six games and five games remaining against teams 500 or above. And so we'll see where that goes. But I think ultimately what you're looking at is that, you know, that's a big setback because he's a very good right tackle, and now they lose him for five games.
John, I'm just looking at most compelling game. Not sure if you've got one in mind. I mean, you look at Cleveland at the Chiefs, which would be interesting because it was a playoff game. How about Steelers at Bills? That's going to be a pretty decent one, too.
That'll be a real good one, yeah. But I think, obviously, the Bills have a big advantage in that one because, you know, they've got a good defense. They can get pressure on the quarterback, and the Steelers go in there with a completely revamped offensive line, five new starters, and that's going to be really tough, including two rookies that are going to be out there starting. So, yeah, I think this is going to be a challenge. I mean, naturally, I think they got smarter in the sense that they changed coordinators. They're going to try to run the ball more with Najee Harris. I think Ben's going to be okay. But right now, I mean, you know, Ben, when you look at some of the people who do ratings on quarterbacks, I mean, Ben's like now in the teens, where you have you know, Josh Allen, you know, among the better quarterbacks in football. Advantage Buffalo.
John, you doing your show tomorrow?
Yes, from 8 until 11.
8 until 11, taking phone calls?
We're definitely taking phone calls.
All right. John, have a great weekend. We will talk to you on Monday.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, our season predictions for the Seahawks and the NFC. That is coming your way next as we continue live from T-Mobile Park with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Our thanks to the professor, John Clayton, who joined us in the previous segment. If you missed that conversation, it's available for you on the podcast page after the show, 710sports.com. Just click the podcast tab and scroll down to our picture and click on that. Everything you missed each and every week will be waiting for you right there. And another reminder, don't forget that Mike Salk is back in mornings each weekday from 6 to 10 a.m., including the Pete Carroll Show every Monday at 9:30 a.m. So check that one out. So now we look at the Seahawks. And I think we've gone through their schedule before, did we not?
Yeah, we have.
I don't remember what my prediction was record-wise. Do you?
I don't think we made predictions.
Did we?
Okay. Yeah, we just went through what are going to be tough games, you know, and I think we looked at Green Bay, the 17th game, which is actually in, what, week 7?
Well, apparently the first nine are going to be really tough, according to ESPN's computer-generated outcome. Because they're going to go 0-9.
Who's pumping information into the computer?
I don't know. I'm not sure how that's working. But as you look at it now, we're on the eve of the game.
Yeah.
How do you see their schedule, and how do you see them finishing in the NFC West?
Well, first of all, I think they can easily be first. Now, easily from the standpoint of how
so easy.
People are discounting them so much. I can't believe that. And if you go and look at, look, maybe we're in for a huge shock. Maybe, you know, the thing that could derail them would be injuries. And particularly, you know, I won't even say it because people will say, you know, you don't want to jinx him. And, you know, but I mean, look, if you can keep your quarterback healthy, if you can keep your running back healthy, look, they've got, you know, a lot of good receivers, but Russ is, you know, he's so good. I mean, I think he can, with a young group of receivers, you know, he can make them better. So, but I think Carson is really key. I feel really good about the offensive line. My sort of bold prediction would be that Will Dissly has a really good, like, Pro Bowl type of year. But I think Carson, the closer we get to the game, the more I think on their offense, he's really going to be key.
So how many wins? You say
because how many games are they playing this year?
That'd be 17.
17. Can't
because I'm giving
that.
Them the same number of wins, but they'll have one more loss. They'll be 12-5.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's realistic. I'm going to go a little bit more bold. Last year I went 13-3, and they went 12-4. But yeah, I'll go.
Yeah, I won last year.
You did?
Yeah, because remember it was me, you, Jim. You went 13. I said 12. He said 11.
Oh, okay. Well, good for you.
You guys were way off.
Good for you, Bob.
So I'm sticking with my lucky number 12. I think
Dave's going to go 13-4.
Oh, don't do that, Dave.
See,
don't.
That was paying
don't
you back.
Don't do that.
13-4. I'm taking it.
13-4.
Yeah, I mean, look, you look in the division. Arizona can always jump up and bite you. You know, if you split with all of them, you know, that'd be I wouldn't be surprised. And then I just think that the New England Green Bay game is going to be really difficult. I think that's going to be tough. They haven't won there in a long time. They play them November 14th. Yeah, so 13-4. Text in your predictions, 710-710.
Where do they finish in the division?
I think they win the division.
13 wins, win the division.
Yeah. I mean, look, you can say, okay, San Francisco. Yeah, I mean, Kyle Shanahan, they're brilliant coaching, everything down there. Who's the quarterback?
Well, that's the only thing keeping me from picking the 49ers to win the division is that I don't have a ton of faith in either quarterback. I think Garoppolo, put in the perfect circumstance, can be very effective. We saw it. You got to a Super Bowl with him. So he certainly can perform when he needs to if he's put in the right spots. Trey Lance, we've got no idea. And if they go with this nonsense of we're going to have a two-headed quarterback situation and we're going to stick to that, there's no way I can pick them. So I think that's what's preventing me. I'm leaning toward, not in a really passionate way, but I think the Seahawks win the division again. If the 49ers had their quarterback situation nailed down and you just knew who it was and you had more faith in Garoppolo, because I think it would be him, I might lean that way. But I think it's going to go, I think it'll go Seattle, I think it'll go San Francisco, the Rams, and then the Cardinals.
San Francisco's running game was so locked in 2019. Remember Raheem Mostert went and scored four touchdowns and ran for a couple hundred yards in that NFC Championship game. But, I mean, I just don't see Jimmy Garoppolo beating you. And then Trey Lance, I mean, is he going to be the guy? He played 17 college football games.
I don't
Can
see
he
it.
Beat you? And I'm going quarterback heavy, but I would also go physical defense is key. And I've been pounding the table on that for a long time. But, I mean, if you go up against the San Francisco 49ers and their running game, you need to have plays like Jordan Brooks made last year where he knocked Kittle on his butt. And, you know, he was coming to block him, and I don't even think Brooks saw him. Took him down and then stuffed the run for no gain. I mean, those are the kinds of plays you need to make in the running game. You can't be catching blocks. You can't be running around blocks. You can't be going sideways. Everything has to be downhill. You have to stop that run game. And the physical defense, you know, if they can get that going, then I feel like they can get that 13-4 record.
So who do you, how does it finish then? You've got Seahawks winning the division. Who do you have second,
I'm
third, good, fourth?
I'm going San Francisco second. I'm sorry. I think
so
that,
we're the same then. So we're the same.
Yeah, I'm putting the Rams third and
Cardinals.
Yeah. Because everybody thought the Cardinals was going to make a big jump last year, and I think I had the Rams. I had the Seahawks winning it, and I had the Rams, I think, second. But I just don't believe in the Rams this year. Maybe they're fourth. Maybe they finished behind the Cardinals because, again, I've been saying this so many times this year, but you look at as far as the coaching staff, mm-hmm, depleted by three coaches, and then I won't say the new D coordinator, I think it is Raheem Morris, but
is it?
Not so. But anyway, you lost Brandon Staley. He's the head coach with the Chargers.
You lost Shane Waldron. You lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, they lose a lot from the coaching ranks. They lose a couple of guys in the secondary. They lose their running back. So I get it. Matt Stafford, we've all agreed, is a step up from Jared Goff. Is he enough of a step up to compensate for the losses they've suffered?
Right.
I don't think he is, personally. Maybe he'll prove us wrong, and we'll be sitting there eating crow going, well, boy, he proved everybody wrong. I was wrong. But at this point, I'm with you. I don't have a ton of faith in what the Rams are going to be. I think they'll be good. I think they could certainly beat the Seahawks. And that doesn't even seem to matter. It doesn't matter whether it's Goff. They beat the Seahawks with Goff at quarterback. They could certainly beat him with Stafford. But as you look at it, so I've got them going 12-5. You've got them 13-4. In those four losses, is there a game there that you look at? Because there's always that surprise game or that game you look at and go, I never would have, like last year, there's no way on God's green earth I would have picked them to lose at home against the Giants with Colt McCoy as the quarterback. I still would pick the Seahawks in that game. I mean, it just, that's one of those games. But those happen every year. There's always that game you're like, wow, that is not one I would have chalked up as a loss. Is there one you look at the schedule now and go, well, that could be that game?
Well, I could repeat what I thought last year, and I thought they might lose
at Washington.
Yeah, so that's one, November 29th. That's is that a Thursday night game, I think?
That is Monday night. Monday night game.
Monday night game. So, yeah, that's...
That's one that caught my eye. That's one I'm looking at going, yeah.
Four first-rounders on their D-line, you know.
Could be one of those games where you go, well, you feel like they should win, but it is on the road and that defense. It is prime time, and Pete does well in prime time, but... Yeah, I don't know that I'd be stunned. Now, we'll see what the teams look like by the time that game approaches. But as we sit here right now, I feel like if they lost that, it probably wouldn't be the most surprising thing in the world.
Yeah, but you bring up a great point. I mean, you look at it and go, oh, no way. I mean, they have Ryan Fitzpatrick as their quarterback. They can't be that good. But like you said, Colt McCoy, the backup.
At home.
At home.
It's the only game you lost at home in the regular season last year.
Yeah.
How did the Giants with Colt McCoy beat you at home? That doesn't even make sense.
So, there it is. That's the one that could be the wild card. But, yeah, I mean, it's just the division, I think everybody, who were we just talking to, said there's no question. Oh, I think it was Mark Schlereth. No question that the NFC West is the toughest division in his mind.
I think most people feel that way, don't they?
Yeah, you know, and now with Baltimore, with those injuries and everything with their running backs, because I would say AFC North is pretty tough.
Yeah.
You got Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Cleveland playing well, not Cincinnati, but still that's a pretty tough division. You know, it'll be interesting to see the NFC East and how that shakes out. You know, are the Cowboys going to be as good as they looked last night, even though they lost the game?
We'll see what happens. See what happens. All right, coming up, a national media member explains why the national media is down on the Seahawks. We'll go inside their head when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob, live from T-Mobile Park on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, Albert Breer's the senior NFL reporter for the Monday Morning Quarterback, and He was talking about the Seahawks and kind of gives his opinion on why the national media, he being one of them, might be down on the Seahawks this year.
Maybe just fatigue. You know, that's the best explanation I can come up with is that, you know, they've been good for a long time. They've been a consistent contender really since he got there. What is it, 12 years ago now? I think, you know, people are used to seeing it, and there's no sort of shiny object for everybody to get excited about the way there is in L.A. with Matthew Stafford, the way there is in San Francisco with Trey Lance.
So what did he say in the beginning? Fatigue? Is that what he said? I missed the opening line.
Yeah, I think it was this. They've been doing the same thing. You know, they win so much.
Yeah.
You know, they win divisions. They get to the playoffs every year.
So it's just the logic of, well, they're due. They're just due to have a bad season, which they haven't really had a bad season. They missed the playoffs that one year, but they haven't had a losing season.
Well, based on what we believe, like, what would have to happen? The most obvious thing is something happens to Russ.
To Russell, yeah. I mean, what was it? The first year with Pete was they were 7-9.
Yeah.
And then since then, they haven't had a losing season.
But, I mean, those are the things that scare the heck out of you. I mean, or you have a 49er type of deal happen, like last year, or, you know, with the Baltimore Ravens right now at their running back position, something like that.
Well, they've had that happen.
Huh?
They've had that happen. The Seahawks. They called Marshawn and Robert Turbin off the couch and said, guys, come help.
Yeah, and they still won a playoff game. Now, it was against the Philadelphia Eagles, and they were banged up.
Who was the quarterback?
Problem. It was Carson Wentz. Mm. Yeah, and then who came in for him? Was it Cade McNown? Guy was coaching high school football somewhere or something, I think.
Yeah.
Or am I wrong? I'm trying to remember who the guy was.
The guy's, Cade McNown's been in the league for at least 50 years, so
yeah.
Very well could have been him.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, I guess I've imagined, you know, look, we all get excited about the season and everything. Like, what could have happened? You know, could this happen? It's just hard to believe with the consistency of Pete Carroll and John Schneider putting together such good teams year after year after year. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens when, if they do start to win, what are people are going to be like, well, they're just feasting on a schedule that's weak, and how long will it take the, you know, the national media to come around? I like it that we're back in a position where the national media is the bad guy again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when they were heaping all that love on Russ over the last year, maybe, year and a half, it was like, hey, ooh, this feels weird.
Made you uncomfortable.
Yeah, I like the criticism better, and I think Seattle Seahawks fans like it too. They're like, yeah, go ahead and give us a chip on our shoulder.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, the star last night was not Tom Brady. It was not Amari Cooper. It wasn't Dak Prescott. It was Vita Vea. The Husky just took over on that one play where he moved the offensive lineman just completely backwards, and Chris Collinsworth couldn't stop raving about it.
This guy is nasty. Not only is he huge, and he covers, like, both gaps, maybe three gaps.
Covering three gaps. That's a lot of gaps, Dave. I mean, he did have a
presence. He's three-gapping, Bob.
He's three-gapping.
You've heard Clayton say two-gapping. There's three-gapping.
Well, there's compacting, and then there's three-gapping. Yeah. But there's no debate. He had a presence last night. He looked like an unstoppable force. Is that who he is week in, week out? No, he hasn't been that guy. But he's a heck of a player, and, boy, he certainly had an impact last night.
Yeah, I mean, he's hard to move. You look at and I was kind of thinking, like, maybe that's who, you know, what we might see out of Puna Ford, you know. So I'm trying to look for Vita Vea's tackles. I mean, I know that he was. Did he record a tackle?
I don't know.
I'm looking at NFL GSIS, and I'm not seeing one. And look, it's a great example, though. I always talk about how the defensive tackles don't show up in the stat book, and they're so valuable. But I would also say Chris Collinsworth has an ability to influence people. Because, remember, that is the worst play call in the history of the NFL in a Super Bowl. Anybody remember that call?
Was he wrong?
Well, was that not, like, the best play ever by Malcolm Butler? To be able to, the physics.
I think he had help.
Physics. I mean, I can't believe how he was able to catch that. Why did he not bounce off of Lockett?
Off of Lockett?
I mean, you can argue
the play. I mean,
all the different things.
Jermaine Kearse got used on that play.
Yeah, he was supposed to block Brandon Browner, and I think it was to Lockett. And everybody's like, why is he throwing it to? And this is Lockett with an E, not Tyler Lockett.
Yeah.
So it was before him. So yeah, I just think that there have been, like, people that have said, you know, that call
And it might have it influenced a lot of people. And so I think, and I'm just saying in a good way, Collinsworth has an ability to make calls like that. And he also is the founder of Pro Football Focus,
which you've got great respect and admiration for.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, somebody texted in, there was a play, it was in a playoff game, where he caught a pass, and I don't know if I ran him down, but I did run up behind him, and then I horse collar tackled him. So people that don't like him just know that I did horse collar tackle him.
You did your part.
And he didn't feel too good after that. I think he was hobbled a little bit. Anyway, yeah, I mean, Chris Collinsworth, he does a good job. He really does, but I mean, I think he's an influencer, and I don't see Vita Vea with a tackle. It's fine. I'm not saying anything bad about Vita Vea. I think he's phenomenal. And you can see what that means to you. If you can get a guy up inside like that, that's just so powerful, hard to move, that will disrupt an offense.
Sweeping the dial.
This was Carlos Dunlap on the huddle with you guys yesterday, Dave. I thought it was interesting because he has a very specific goal in mind, and anything less is going to be a failure.
I got a lot of proof, obviously. I've gone public talking, putting it in the air about my goals for this year. My aspirations are to get 13 sacks so I can get above 100. But obviously, that's the floor for me. That's not the ceiling. So I don't set the ceiling. I'll set the floor and then tackle everything in between.
He put it out there in the air.
I thought you were gonna play the second part, so I was like, hold on. I think that, and it wasn't 12, and it was 12 and a half, because I said, I think.
For Jamal?
Jamal Adams said 12, and then he was like, oh, yeah, he thinks so, huh? You know, but he's definitely committed to the fact that he wanted that record, the leading sack artist on this team, to be in the D-line room.
Well, his career high is 13 and a half back in 2015. So he's reached that number, 13. He's done it once.
This is 12th year? 11th year?
2010 was his first year.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's amazing what this guy has done. I mean, and how well he plays right now. And you look at him out there as physically, I don't think he's had a ton of injuries in his career. And
now you look at his numbers. His first 2 years, he played 12 games each, and then 14, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 14, and then last year, 15.
Right, because there was
pretty darn durable
week in there where I think it was where he wasn't going to play, and then that was in around the time they were training. But yeah, incredibly durable. He looks great. Can't believe how tall he is, and he's just one of those guys that, I don't know, his moves and everything, does it look like, one a great pass rush move like Von Miller or anything like that? Not necessarily, but he just gets it done, and he's very powerful. Like, he's got a great bull rush. So can't wait to see what he gets. But can you imagine he gets 13? I mean, hopefully they can get what they got last year. 46 sacks, that's up there. I mean, the average was about 40 since Pete Carroll's been here.
Well, it looks like the plan is to get 25 and a half just between him and Jamal Adams. So that'll be great.
That'll be good. We got a Bogan sighting in the booth.
That's right. A special in-person appearance is coming our way next. Ryan Roland-Smith will join us as we continue live from T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.